You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Good morning. I'm Cardinal Francis George. For the next hour, the Archdiocese of Chicago will be hosting discussions on issues, people, and associations that touch our lives. Welcome to the Catholic Community of Faith.
Good morning. Welcome to Catholic Community of Faith on Relevant Radio 950 AM. I'm Father Greg Sackowitz, pastor of St. Mary of the Woods on Chicago's Northwest Side. Time in Chicago is 9 a.m. on this beautiful, beautiful Friday morning in Chicago, co-hosting, first time in a long time,
Wayne about 7 weeks,
Majors.
Right? I'm glad.
Vice President and Chief of Staff,
Larry
University.
I'm glad we were able to get the contract negotiations behind us. It was a long, arduous struggle, but we're back here and everything is good.
Well, the bottom line is, I don't like you.
I know.
That's why you've been off the air.
That's right.
It's been a long, it's 7 weeks.
It has been 7 weeks.
Times in which I have been on.
But you look younger and more vibrant than ever.
And you lie.
So that's good.
And
I do.
It's hard to believe it's the last weekend of summer, and Wayne, for the last like 19 days in a row, have been spectacular. Every day, mid-70s, 80, sunny, a little rain at night. And
it's
the best part of
the problem,
summer,
right?
Has been, save for September, when all the kids are back in school and everything's up and running. But for the folks, please enjoy it, because they're talking a beautiful weekend, and hopefully the Bears will rebound on Sunday against the Steelers.
You knew
and
there was going to be a sports
reference. Well, it has to be.
Jason.
This is a Catholic Community of Faith sports special. And you're listening to Catholic Community of Faith. Our phone number is 312-255-8408. We have a tremendous program lined up, again, thanks to our producer, Jim Dish. Our topic is the 10th anniversary of the Joint Declaration on the Doctrine of Justification. Our guest in studio, Jason Rankin, back by popular demand, assistant to the directors of the Office for Ecumenical and Interreligious Affairs. Also with us on phone, the Reverend Donald J. McCoy, executive for Ecumenical and Interreligious Relations, Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. Also by phone, Reverend James Massa, executive director, Secretariat for Ecumenical and Interreligious Affairs, United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. Welcome to our guest this morning on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Good morning,
Pastor Don. Good morning, Father James. And good morning to Jason. Maybe for our listeners, as a way to get into the program, our topic, the 10th anniversary of the Joint Declaration on the Doctrine of Justification, to let our listeners know exactly what does that mean and why was it even devised? Who would like to give it a shot?
This is Don McCoy. I would be happy to give a beginning. This is the Joint Declaration on the Doctrine of Justification was so significant because at the time of the Reformation, the Doctrine of Justification was kind of the central importance of the Lutheran Reformation. It was held to be the first and chief article according to our Lutheran confessions, and I will quote, the ruler and judge over all other Christian doctrines. So it became a point of discussion. Different valuations between the Catholic Church and Lutherans was obvious. There were attempts to bridge dialogue, and it was a unresolved doctrine that existed probably as a great difference between Lutherans and Catholics through the centuries. So when it came time, the post Vatican II conversations and the development of wonderful papers and discussions, a Lutheran Roman Catholic Study Commission in 1972, and then further dialogue in 1994, leading up to grace alone in faith and Christ's saving work, not because of any merit on our own part. We are accepted by God and receive the Holy Spirit, who renews our hearts while equipping and calling us to good work.
See, I think, Don, I think it's so critical for our listeners to know, because they may get overwhelmed by, you know, what is a declaration of the doctrine of justification? There's a long history. That whole sense of, you know, is it by works or by faith? And that's the big, you know, battle line going back. You know, we save by the works and the faith. And so maybe take another step further. Then what is the joint declaration on the doctrine of justification? James?
Yeah, I think, you know, this really gets at the heart of why there are Catholics and why there are Protestants and evangelicals today that are not part of the same church. I mean, it goes back to those early years, as Pastor McCoy indicated, in the 1500s. Luther felt that, Martin Luther, the great Protestant reformer, felt that the Catholic Church had incorporated a number of corrupt practices, or practices that had become corrupt, that might have been legitimate in their origins, but became corrupt, such as the selling of indulgences, mm-hmm. which the church quickly corrected. We are saved by grace. God showed his great line from St. Paul. God showed his love for us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. That's how we become righteous. That's what justification means, the term becoming righteous, becoming just. It's Christ who gives us the grace to be just and righteous and to do good works. Now, that beautiful paragraph 15 that Pastor McCoy quoted, it's very carefully crafted. The first part does justice to Lutheran concerns. The Lutheran concern primarily is that salvation begins with the gift of Christ's work, his death on the cross, his rising from the dead. That's the great gift. But then the second part of the sentence does justice to the Catholic concern, which is that as soon as we are made just, the Holy Spirit begins to renew our hearts and makes us capable of love and good works and all of the good things that a Christian is supposed to do. It begins with God's gift, but then that gift is transformative. It changes us so that we can be like Christ.
And we want to pursue that, especially in light of what it means.
If you haven't read the Catholic New World lately, you're in for quite a surprise. It's bigger, bolder, and better than ever before.
The Catholic New World is a rich and diverse resource for Catholics throughout the Archdiocese of Chicago. It carries stories of faith, hope, and inspiration. Our most read column is written by our publisher, Cardinal Francis George, our shepherd, teacher, and leader.
Our columnists provide support in spirituality and evangelization, and you'll want to browse the Around the Archdiocese page, your gateway to Catholic activities throughout Cook and Lake Counties.
As we celebrate the Year for Priests, look for stories about how we honor our priests. In the Pope's words, with gratitude for their work and witness of their life.
Visit our website at www.catholicnewworld.com. View our photo gallery, catch up on the latest news, and while you're there, subscribe to the Catholic New World or call 312-534-7777.
Better than ever, subscribe now to the Catholic New World.
The cemetery ministry is a core ministry of our Catholic faith tied to the corporal works of mercy. Cardinal George says, "It's comforting to know that our Catholic cemeteries are caring for the remains of our loved ones awaiting the resurrection. There are 43 Archdiocese of Chicago cemeteries willing to help you during times of loss. Call 708-449-6100 for assistance. Catholic Cemeteries, serving the Catholic community since 1837.
Welcome Welcome back into the program, Relevant Radio 950 AM. On a Friday morning, Wayne Madjars and Father Greg Sekwitz on Catholic Community of Faith. Our telephone number, area code 312-255-8408, if you'd like to join in on the conversation. Lutheran Roman Catholic dialogue been going on as an outgrowth of Vatican II since around July of 1964. And what we're delving into in the first part of the program today is the upcoming 10th anniversary celebration of the Joint Declaration on the Doctrine of Justification between the Lutheran and Roman Catholic Churches. Pastor Don McCoy is with us. He is the Executive for Ecumenical and Interreligious Dialogue for the ELCA, and Father James Massa, who is the Executive Director and Secretary for Ecumenical and Interreligious Affairs for the U.S. Catholic Bishops. Jason Rankin is also here from our own Office of Ecumenical and Interreligious Affairs at the Archdiocese. Jason, this upcoming celebration is going to be taking place at Old St. Pat's on Thursday, October 1st. Tell us a little bit about what it's going to be like for anyone who may be interested in attending.
Well, this is a national celebration that the principal co-organizers are Pastor McCoy and Father Massa, and so we are deeply grateful to them. The co-hosts of the event itself will be Cardinal Francis George and Bishop Mark Hansen. Cardinal Francis George, of course, is president of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. Bishop Mark Hansen is the presiding bishop of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. And we have the homilist coming in is Archbishop Wilton Gregory, Archbishop of Atlanta, who, of course, is native of Chicago here.
Sure, he was ordained a priest in the Archdiocese of Chicago back in May of 1973. Mm-hmm. Wonderful, wonderful now Archbishop, and just a tremendous gift to the church, not only in Chicago and Atlanta, but the whole world.
Mm-hmm. And yes, certainly. And so we're encouraging people to come and hear his words of the homily, as well as the words of Reverend Ishmael Noko, who is the General Secretary of the Lutheran World Federation. The format of the evening, of course, Wayne, you stated it is Thursday, October 1st at 6:30 p.m. at Old St. Pat's here in Chicago. We're encouraging people to RSVP to our office. And
what would be that number or the web, Jason?
That would be 312-534-5325.
The number once again
is 312-534-5325. And we have an email address as well, which is eia@archchicago.org.
Once again for that.
eia@archchicago.org.
Okay, terrific. We'll give that information again toward the end of the program around 9:28. Pastor Don, this whole thing of with this joint declaration on the doctrine of justification, I mean, we are talking, this is not easy conversation in terms of this is important material, incredibly rooted in history. But the question I have is, why was the doctrine of justification important at the time of the Reformation?
Well, it became the reformers, and especially Luther and Melanchthon, were trying to articulate what really should be at the center of every Christian's faith, and understanding how we are forgiven and how we are saved was a central point by which all other doctrines should have evolved. And there were differences, certainly, and Father Massa has indicated that some of the challenges were certainly addressed by the Catholic Church, but the breach that took place was an unfortunate one, because there was not really the opportunity to look at the seriousness of what those divisions were and what Lutherans and Catholics were saying. I think if we fast forward it to today, or at least to the time of the Joint Declaration, to be able to articulate a common understanding of our justification by God's grace through faith, and the place of works and the life of a Christian, that became such an important breakthrough. It doesn't cover all that each of our traditions teach about justification. But what is important is it encompasses a consensus on the basic truths of the doctrine of justification, and says that any remaining differences in its explication is no longer an occasion for doctrinal condemnations. This became a point of some very harsh things were said, and it is when you think about the importance of this was a major breakthrough to have this joint statement on the doctrine of justification for Catholics and for Lutherans, and having the Lutheran World Federation, which is 140 Lutheran churches around the world and a communion of churches, and the Vatican being able to agree and sign this historic agreement should be something that not only is celebrated but becomes the focus of all of our discussions.
Now, Father James, it's clear when you start getting into all of this that there has been a tremendous amount of progress, a tremendous amount of mutual understanding that has taken place, not only in the past 10 years since the doctrine, but also previous to that, since dialogue between Catholics and Lutherans began. There have also been bumps in the road, I'm sure, where difficult conversations are had between these two religions, and issues come up where there just is not what Cardinal Bernardine had labeled as common ground. How do you get through those moments? How does it happen in the history of this dialogue when something really difficult confronts the two groups, focusing on more of the commonalities than the differences?
Sure. I just want to underscore one point that Don, the Bishop McCoyd, Pastor McCoyd, made, and that is that, you know, this was an agreement, not just between two groups of theologians from each church sitting down. This was an agreement between two churches, and that's why in the ecumenical movement of the second half of the 20th century, and it happens on the eve of the new millennium, October 31st, 1999, this was a real breakthrough. And that's why it's important to celebrate it 10 years later. Yes, every ecumenical relationship has its stresses. And the Lutheran-Catholic relationship is no different in that regard. As is known by many people in the Chicago area and around the country, the ELCA, Lutheran Church, voted in a social statement and a set of policies regarding the hiring, the appointment of clergy who are in same-gender relationships or unions. And, of course, this is a big issue for us as Catholics, who are concerned about giving the right witness that includes the teachings of Christ and the teachings of the Church throughout the ages. There's a feeling on our part that there has been a kind of a departure from biblical teaching on homosexuality and marriage. Now, there are Lutheran colleagues of mine who would say, no, we're reading the scriptures differently. There's a call right now within the ecumenical movement for looking at the foundations of moral discernment. How do we read the same scriptures and arrive at different positions on these issues? Now, that happens between churches. It also happens within churches. Pastor McCoy could even speak to that, that within the Lutheran communion, there are disagreements over the decisions that were made in Minneapolis last month. But that's why we need dialogue.
But I think that's a wonderful way of positioning it too, because I would imagine that those issues, those moments, and there have been many, I'm sure, over the decades that Catholics and Lutherans and Catholics and Methodists and Catholics and X have been talking, are real moments of grace that could make one's own faith traditions stronger and more vibrant. And I could imagine those situations is really becoming not only listening sessions for other faith traditions, but opportunities to reposition, think through, and understand one's own theology, one's own faith traditions a lot stronger and better than
even take it to another level. And that is, you talk about differences between Catholics and Lutherans, Catholics and Methodists, whatever, it doesn't matter particular denomination, with our own Catholic tradition, there's disagreements. You know, Catholic with Catholic. We're going to break here on Catholic Community of Faith on Relevant Radio, 9:50 a.m. Time is 9:21 here in Chicago on this beautiful Friday morning. I'm Father Greg Sackwitz along with Wayne Majors, and we have three tremendous guests, Jason Rankin, Reverend Donald McCoy, and Reverend James Massa. Our phone number, 312-255-8408. Stay with us. We'll be back right after a break.
Catholics, Lutherans, and Methodists confess that justification is accomplished by grace alone, in faith in Christ's saving work, and not because of any merit on our part. This statement comes from the 1999 Joint Declaration on the Doctrine of Justification, whose 10th anniversary will be celebrated on Thursday, October 1st at 6:30 p.m. at Old St. Patrick's Church in Chicago. A service of solemn evening prayer and reception will be co-hosted by Francis Cardinal George and Presiding Bishop Mark Hansen of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. Archbishop Wilton Gregory of the Archdiocese of Atlanta will be the homilist, and Reverend Ishmael Noko of the Lutheran World Federation will address the congregation. Please attend and invite others to do so. RSVPs are requested by calling 312-534-5325 or emailing eia@archchicago.org. May we always pray for the unity of the body of Christ.
Time now for a Catholic Festival of Faith news update.
Families will be in the forefront at this fall's Catholic Festival of Faith with several activities designed to help parents and children celebrate their Catholic faith together. The festival is scheduled for Friday and Saturday, October 16th and 17th at the Stevens Convention Center in Rosemont. Get more information and register at www.catholicfest.org.
Stay tuned to Relevant Radio for more Catholic Festival of Faith news updates.
When was the last time you spoke with your neighbors? How are they holding up in these current hard economic times? People in your neighborhood, even the person living right next door, might be struggling. It could be a few late mortgage payments, a food shortage, or even problems with substance abuse or domestic violence. At Catholic Charities, your neighbors are in our care. We work to feed, clothe, counsel, and shelter anyone in need. Consider donating to our Neighbors in Need Fund. Visit us at CatholicCharities.net or call 312-655-7525.
Welcome back to Catholic Community of Faith on Relevant Radio, 9:50 a.m. Pastor Don McCoy is with us from the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. Father James Massa, the Executive Director of Ecumenical Interreligious Affairs at the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. Jason Rankin, also from our own Office of Ecumenical and Interreligious Affairs here at the Archdiocese of Chicago. Before the break, gentlemen, we were talking about the God's grace through faith in Christ and how that really has become the common thread and really the foundation of the discussions between Catholics and Lutherans. Pastor Don, where does that take us from here? Where are we and where are we going next as long as we keep our attention focused on our foundational commonalities here?
I'd like to share a statement that, very brief, a couple words that Cardinal Casper, who heads the Vatican Council on Christian Unity, made about the Joint Declaration on Justification. And he said that the quality and intensity of our relationships through this agreement has greatly increased our understanding of one another. And the Cardinal said, "We held out our hands to each other as churches, and we do not wish to let go ever again." And I think that, you know, in as Father James shared, we continue to see areas of great challenge, and the whole area of moral and ethical deliberation and conversation needs to be something that we need to address, and that's a dialogue that's happening internally within the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, and with our dialogue partners. We have the greatest respect for the Catholic Church. When I was young, it would not have been probably heard that we would be praying for the Holy Father and the prayers of the Church. And we are in a new day of understanding. And I think that as we look at the centering our life on the salvation that we have in Jesus Christ, that we look at how God's grace touches our life and the life of Christians, and it was wonderful to have the Methodist World Council join in support of this agreement as well, and I think that's very significant. So as we set at tables, even in our current Lutheran-Catholic dialogue, we're looking at some subjects that were not even on the drawing board between dialogues, like on purgatory and the like. So we are not afraid to address the issues. And I think it is out of respect and out of this doctrine that helps.
Now, Father James, Pastor Don mentioned something that we probably don't think about much when we think about ecumenical dialogue, and that is what that dialogue means to our own conversations within the Catholic Church. And that is a dimension and a richness, really, that those like the three of you who are involved in ecumenism can appreciate, probably more of us who are Catholics and really not as involved and immersed in this area as you are, right?
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely true. That, I mean, at a kind of high level of scholarship, the documents from our bilateral dialogues of the last 45 years, you know, have a function, have a role. Theologians are talking about, or seminary professors are teaching from our documents that come out of these dialogues. But on a more, you know, kind of day-to-day level for the faithful in our churches, the members of our congregations, these dialogues remind us of the core. They point to the core. You know, what is our future as human beings? Where are we going in this life? What are we called to? How do we struggle with our fears of many things, our fear of death? How do we live a virtuous life and live a life that pleases God, that is in harmony with God's plan for us? I mean, these are all basic questions. And our dialogues point to the foundations of Christianity, the Holy Scriptures, the wisdom of the early church fathers, the teachings of saints and commentators and reformers down through the ages. I mean, and so it has an impact on our preaching, on Sunday morning. It has an impact on what our teachers are saying in their religious ed programs with children and young people. I think it across the board, it has an impact.
Well, there's no question we have come a long way. I remember when I was in grammar school, I'm graduated in 1967, maybe second or third grade. One of my classmates...
A long time ago.
We don't have to say that, for Pete's sakes. You're not so much younger yourself, Wayne. That's another subject.
They had grammar schools back then?
We had electricity, too, and pencils. And remember, one of my classmates in second grade went into a Lutheran church, and the whole class was up in arms. Like, wow, went into a Lutheran church, and this is going back in the early 60s. We need to bring this segment to a close. But now, Jason, before closing, again, the date and how to find out more information.
Well, this is a service of solemn evening prayer commemorating the 10th anniversary of the Joint Declaration on the Doctrine of Justification. And again, that's between the Catholic Church and the Lutheran World Federation. But also want to make an important point about the affirmation by the World Methodist Council in 2006 that has been a significant achievement within the last 10 years, although we're celebrating this 10th anniversary at this occasion. And Thursday, October 1st at 6:30 p.m.
Where?
Old St. Pat's Church here in Chicago, and you can call 312-534-5325.
That number once again.
312-534-5325.
And a web.
EIA@archchicago.org.
I want to thank in a very special way our three guests for the first half, Jason Rankin, Reverend Donald McCoy, and Reverend James Massa. Thank you very much for sharing on a very deep level. May God bless you. May the dialogue and communication continue. You're listening to Catholic Communication of Faith, Community of Faith. Too much communication, Wayne. On Relevant Radio, 9:50 a.m., I'm Father Greg Sachs along with Wayne Madjars. Our phone number, 312-255-8408. Stay with us and do not touch that dial.
Choosing an elementary school for your child is one of the biggest decisions you will ever make to shape your child's future. So why pick a Catholic school?
I want my kids to learn more than the three R's. They need a faith-based education so they make good decisions.
I want my son and daughter to go to college. At Catholic schools, attendance and graduation rates are nearly 100%. And when these kids graduate, they go to college.
My teacher is so cool. She knows who I am. She helps me when I have trouble figuring things out.
My son is in the number. The student-teacher ratio is 18 to 1, and Catholic school teachers are really dedicated.
I want my daughter to feel welcome, to be safe.
The test scores are well above the national average. Look out, college. Here they come.
Go to www.archchicago.org and click on Schools to learn more about the great benefits of a Catholic education. Invest in your child's future. Make your child a winner for life.
You're invited to attend an evangelization workshop, Learning to Labor in the Vineyard, sponsored by Bishop Joseph Perry's office and the Office for Black Catholics on Saturday, September 19th at St. Rita High School at 7740 Southwestern Avenue. This promises to be a wonderful workshop for everyone who serves in church ministries, for all who want to share the good news. The facilitator is Deacon Alex Jones of the Archdiocese of Detroit. The day-long evangelization experience is free. You can register through your church community or contact the Office for Black Catholics at 312-534-8376. We hope to see you Saturday, September 19th at St. Rita High School. Call 312-534-8376 and become part of Learning to Labor in the Vineyard.
You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Every Monday through Friday from 9 to 10 a.m., the Archdiocese of Chicago presents programming about the people, the issues, and the faith that affect all our lives. Thanks for staying with us here on Relevant Radio 950 AM. Now again, the Catholic Community of Faith.
Welcome back into the program, 9:34 on a Friday morning in Chicago. Wayne Madjars and Father Greg Sackwitz, Catholic Community of Faith. Our telephone number, 312-255-8408.
When did we change the name?
408. Well, you know, it was just during the break. We had a meeting in the control room and said, let's go back to community as opposed to communications.
Oh, okay.
But that's okay.
I won't be able to live this one down.
Ladies, you'll know that the next 25 minutes or so, he won't be able to get through without at least one major error. So I'll keep my
per break
tally here. We're talking second half of the program this morning about Amade House. And Amade House, I think, has been with us before on a number of occasions to talk through a little bit about what they do. And in particular, their 13th annual Amade House Servathon, which is coming up on Saturday, October 24th. In the studio with us is Annie Devine, who's the program director for Amade House, Colette Healy, who works in the development area for Amade. Linda is Meyer.
Meyer.
Yeah. I knew I'd get it wrong. Meyer, who is a one of their many volunteers, actually serving with the Blessed Sacrament Youth Program at Our Lady of Good Counsel Church, and Megan Krantz, who is also a volunteer serving with that same program. So welcome, all of you, to the program.
Thanks.
Good morning, ladies.
Thanks for joining us today. Andy, maybe we'll start with you as the program director for Amade House. For those of our listeners who may not know what you do, tell us a little bit about it.
Mm-hmm. We're the Young Adult Volunteer Program of the Archdiocese of Chicago. So every year we have over 35 young adults that come and serve full-time at different schools, social service agencies, clinics across the city of Chicago, and they live in community and meet weekly for formation and different education activities.
So it's really an opportunity for young people to get plugged into the service end of the church. Megan, is that how you got involved? What attracted you to work at Amade?
I think it was just a big part of the community living and living with other people who wanted to dedicate their lives to a year of service and working with youth in the Chicago area and being in a big city.
Well, the question now, there's 35 new young people involved.
Actually, 36 this year.
Do they all live under the same roof? They couldn't possibly.
No, they don't. We actually have three different communities. One in Uptown.
Where are they located, by the way? Okay, Uptown?
Yeah, one in Uptown, one in McKinley Park, and then one in Little Village.
Okay, now, Colette, with all the things you could have done, what attracted you to do a year of service in Amade House?
I actually work in the development area for Amade, so
error number one.
I'm actually
not looking at script.
My charge is actually reaching out to parishes throughout the Archdiocese and letting them know about Amade House and what our program does, and letting people in parishes throughout the Archdiocese know if they have children or if they're people that they young people that they know who they think might be interested in a year of service. And especially with Amade House, the real difference with Amade from other volunteer programs is the formation component. Amade really makes a difference in young people's lives because so many staff resources are dedicated to the formation, the faith formation component. So I'm actually charged with going out and spreading the word about Amade.
Well, Linda, I messed up on the question with Colette, maybe with you. What drew you to a year of service when you could have been doing so many things with your life at this age?
I've always kind of been drawn to service. My parents growing up were part of the community. I'm from a small town, and so they did a lot of different things like Lions Club and Girl Scouts, helping us out with those. And I just figured after college, I've got my whole life to work, so I've really been drawn to service. Why not do it now?
Where'd you go to college?
St. Norbert College in De Pere.
Okay. Right.
So.
And how about you, Megan?
I went to the College of St. Benedict, St. John's University.
I was there on
Minnesota.
Monday.
Really?
Fabulous, fabulous campus. 2,700 beautiful acres of trees and lakes, and I could live there. It's nice.
Me too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? One of the things that I have seen, especially in the college student population over the past decade or so, is an unbelievable appetite on the part of college students to give back, to take that year of service, working at a Jesuit university, either a Jesuit volunteer corps or something like that, before you start the work, which is going to continue for the rest of your life, to really take some time, take a breath, and give back and do something that really you are passionate about. Do you, both Megan and Linda, see that among your peers today? Is what I'm saying, is that real, or am I off the...
No, I definitely see it. And actually, St. Norbert just started their own volunteer community this year, so I think that's great that they're reaching out to our student population with that. But I have so many friends who they were like grad school, or I could do service, or I could get into the real world. But a lot of people are at least thinking about that opportunity to do service.
Do you find the same thing, Megan?
Yeah, I think it's definitely kind of a newer thing, the opportunity to volunteer, but people are really, especially with the economy right now, it's just something else to really get a change and not necessarily have to burn yourself out working right away. And
see, to see people like, you know, the four of you, I realize that, you know, Annie is the program director, and with, Colette working in development, but you have seen these different groups come and go year in and year out. And I would also agree with Wayne. I find that by and large, young people are tremendously interested in giving a part of their life back to the community in service. And I'm sure that with the 36 young people you have for this year, out of curiosity, how many applicants did you have?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, we had, I think, probably over 50 applications that came in last year. And that was before
we... So you did not have room for everybody.
No, yeah, we had to turn people away.
Mm-hmm. What do you look for in volunteers to kind of get some sense that they're going to really fit and get what they should out of a Mare House?
Mm-hmm. Well, we're really looking for people who are excited about our mission and excited about living in intentional community. It's not the easiest year to go and move to a new city and to live in community with sometimes 9, 10, 11, 12 other people and to serve in underserved communities with people who are at risk or low income. There's a lot of challenges. So we look for people that are excited and energized about that. And people who are really committed to not just serving others, but also their own development.
See, I think, Annie, you hit on something very important. It's not just going out for, you know, Megan and Linda and working in a particular ministry among the poor, whatever the ministry happens to be for you. But we in the seminar, we used to call it theological reflection in terms of the experience you have just experienced. Now reflect upon that, rooted in our baptism, and what does this mean? So it's more than just doing good works, but somehow reflecting upon that, and what does that mean? So who'd like to maybe speak to the formation component of it? So it's, for example, Megan, your ministry is doing what?
We're working in an after-school program working with high school students and middle school students from Southside McKinley Park area.
This is the Blessed Sacrament Youth Program at Our Lady of Good Counsel.
Mm-hmm.
You're both together.
Yes.
And so then, so what does formation look like for you when you've done a day or a week? What happens then?
Well, we have a large community. We have 13 people living in our house, so we all have different work schedules. In the morning, we miss a lot of people because we work later, but we come home, and either we come home early and cook, or somebody's cooked for us, and then we have a large community dinner. Everybody tries their best to be there. Thursdays, we usually have a prayer night together. Every Wednesday night, we try and get all three communities together, actually, for community night, and have some sort of speaker or a topic that we reflect on. We have another dinner that night. So getting together and trying to do things in a large group and, I guess, growing together.
Yeah, and that community piece of it, that's where it really is so important, because if not for the community, this really would be a service project,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, it's this dimension that adds the faith formational component, and that really provides an opportunity for a different level of appreciation for what you're doing it for and why it's important to you as a person. Is, mm-hmm. is that a good way to put it?
Yeah, I think that's really important. There are a lot of service programs out there that don't have the aspect of living in community, so it is really an essential piece of what we do. And a lot of it's because we recognize that young adults who participate in the program learn and grow with each other. They challenge each other. They support each other. And that's a really important experience in the year. And more often than not, volunteers that leave our program say, it was the best part of my year and it was the hardest part of my
Megan,
year.
Megan, is it what you expected when you signed up for the program?
Yes, it's very much just learning to live together, but it's also very nice having that. A lot of times you come home to a dinner that's ready for you to eat and like people to talk to when the day was rough, like working with like hard people to work with just because kids are from different housing that and different lifestyles that are just really tough. And so being able to go home and discuss with our housemates and kind of unwind.
So it's kind of a support community in many ways, right?
Very
well,
much
the thing so. Is that I see here, you know, with Megan and with Linda, two young women as part of this community. Colette, what is the difference? How many men and how many women make up the 36? Do you know, is it about half and half?
No, we wish it was half and half.
There are, generally speaking, far more women in the program than men.
And
that's something
more,
that we work on.
Yeah, we have 9 men in the program this year.
We'd make it then 27 mm-hmm. women. And we come after a break, Colette, I'm going to ask more what you do as part of Amante House. You're listening to Catholic Community of Faith on Relevant Radio, 950 AM. Time is 9:45 in the morning. Our phone number, 312-255-8408. Father Greg Sackwitz along with Wayne Majars. We'll be back right after a break, and do not touch that dial.
Are you a teen who's tired of peer pressure? Who feels bombarded daily by messages and isn't sure what to do? Do you want to know how to have happy and healthy relationships? Then come to the 5th Annual Life Night Teen Rally on September 27th from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. at Holy Family Parish in Inverness. This rally will feature nationally renowned speaker Jason Everett, great music, mass reconciliation, and much more. And it costs nothing. If you are a parent, this event is perfect for your 8th grade through high school sons or daughters. Again, join hundreds of teens from around Chicago on September 27th for the 5th Annual Life Night Teen Rally. For more information and Jason Everett's full schedule of events in Chicago, please visit www.respectlifechicago.org or call 312-534-5355.
Sponsored by the Chastity Education Initiative of the Archdiocese of Chicago Respect Life Office.
You're invited to watch The Church, the Cardinal, and You this weekend on cable television. Here's host Graziano Marcheschi.
Catholic couples defy the odds and celebrate 50 years of marriage. The Jubilarians will tell us their secrets of success. Theology on Tap celebrates another successful season of the Summer Talk series. We'll take you to the wrap-up picnic, and we'll talk to Cardinal George about the heated debate over health care reform.
For several interesting stories about the Archdiocese, please watch The Church, the Cardinal, and You this weekend on cable television. Go to www.archchicago.org and click on Radio TV for the time and cable channel in your area. That's www.archchicago.org. The Church, the Cardinal, and You, compelling television about your Archdiocese.
Welcome back to Catholic Community of Faith on Relevant Radio, 950 AM. I'm Father Greg Sagwitz, along with Wayne Majars. We are speaking to four lovely young women regarding Amate House, and our guests are Annie Devine, Colette Healy, Linda Meyer, and Megan Kranz. And before the break, Colette was asking you specifically, in your work with development, you go from parish to parish speaking about Amate House, and you said to us off the air, you are amazed at how many people have never heard of Amate House or the great work that is being done by Amate House. And this is the 26th year of existence of Amate House. So when you go into a parish, what, you speak at all the masses, or how does it work with you?
Well, generally speaking, when we go out into the parishes, the real purpose of our being there is to let our volunteers speak for the work that we do. And oftentimes this takes the form of the volunteers providing a post-communion reflection at masses, but we recognize that in some cases mass opportunities are getting fewer and fewer because obviously pastors are receive many, many requests for the, of this type.
That is so, very true.
So we reach out to parishes in many ways. Our real purpose in doing so is to let parishioners know, A, that we exist, and B, you know, what we can do for the young people in parishes, because there's kind of a missing component there. After, you know, kids go through confirmation formation and then they're off to college, then there, it seems in a lot of parishes, there's kind of a hole
there.
There's a gap. And Amate House can certainly fill that gap.
What is the age group for Amate House?
Generally speaking, most of our volunteers are between the ages of 21 and 29. Most of them are college graduates. Some have already been to grad school. But in most cases, they're right out of college.
You want to reach young people, you got to speak the language in the communication vehicles that they use. The web, Facebook, doing all that stuff to get to potential volunteers?
Yes. As a matter of fact, we would love it if everyone listening today would visit our website.
What is our website?
It's www.amatehouse.org.
And Amate is A-M-A-T-E. So once again with the web.
Yes. And amatehouse.org. And people often ask us, so we really should tell them, amate is actually a Latin derivative of the verb in action, love in action.
Mm-hmm.
So people always wonder about that. They say, what does amate actually mean? And that's what our volunteers do.
Megan, how'd you find out about Amate House?
My house coordinator, Lisa Wolf, she actually went to St. Ben's, St. John's, and so she came, and just for a volunteer fair, I was just looking around at the different booths, and she was there recruiting.
And Linda, how did you find out about Amate House?
My supervisor for the past 4 years at college had been occasionally telling us about different experiences she had, and she did Amate House about 20 years ago. And then I went through the response booklet, which is for a bunch of different volunteer programs, and I came across them again myself.
Do you use the volunteers that are currently in the program to attract the next wave? I mean, how long can you be at Amate House? Is it a year of service? Is it longer? Can you stay?
You sign on for 1 year, but okay. You do have the option of reapplying for a second year if you'd like.
Okay. How many do that, Annie, on a whole?
You know, it depends from year to year. We've had as few as one and as many as six.
Okay.
So it just depends on the year.
So which means in the 25 into your 26th year of existence, how many people have gone through the program?
Over 550.
It'd have to be more than that.
Well, we started off smaller.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Yeah. In the very beginning, we were just one community. I think there were four or five volunteers when we started.
And now, is there ever talk of even growing to a group of 40 or 50, or is about 35, 36 your limit?
We talk about it. The big thing that we want to be sure is that we don't lose the strong sense of community that we have. You know, and sometimes, when a community gets bigger, you lose some of that intimacy. So it's not to say that, I mean, it might happen. We don't know. We're sort of always looking to see, like, who's interested in being in Amate House.
It was very interesting. In listening to the four of you, the one word that I keep hearing over and over again is that word community, mm-hmm. which it's interesting when you're talking about in the Catholic Church, and going back to the earliest communities at the time of Christ and in the first, second century, they were so big into community. And ironically, we live in a country today that really specializes in individualism. It's interesting. In the world we live in, like, you know, it was a book entitled Wayne, like Bowling Alone, talks about we come from the history of our country in terms of community, but as the generations have moved on, we so somehow stress the need to be unique and individual, stand alone, I don't need church, that all I keep hearing from the four of you is the importance of community. And, you know, Megan, you're shaking your head. So have you experienced so far that community is at the very heart of Amate House?
Yeah, definitely. Even just our first 2 weeks of orientation and being around was just, community was stressed so much, and getting to know our individual houses and all the houses and alums and just the people in our direct community, our neighborhood, it's just all over. And it's
one way that outsiders, if you will, can get a little taste of what Amate House does is to join a lot of the volunteers for a day of service in the city of Chicago, and that's coming up, 13th annual now, your Servathon on Saturday, October 24th. Annie, talk a little bit about it.
Mm-hmm. Every year, except for last year, which was our 25th anniversary, and we did a food drive instead, we have a day of service, and we invite people to join the Amate House volunteers and alumni and family in serving the city of Chicago. We already have over 200 volunteers already signed up for the day. And
where's the location?
Well, we have locations all over the city, but we'll be gathering on the north side and on the south side at our residences, and then we'll send them out to their service sites for the morning, and then regather for a lunch and for some reflection on that service.
How do you register?
You can go to our website at www.amatehouse.org, and you can find information there about the Servathon, and you can also contact me at our office.
And what is that number, Annie?
It's 773-376-2445.
That number once again.
773-376-2445.
You know, for anyone who has not taken the service plunge, I would really encourage it. A number of years ago, and we do this every year at the university, a collection of faculty and staff and student volunteers come together, but we focus on one service project. And a couple of years ago, we painted a grade school,
cleaned your house.
You would never recognize the power of people focused on the same service job until you realize that in the course of 2 hours, 193 people with rollers and brushes and paint cans painted an entire grammar school. And after you walk down the hall 3 hours later, you said, wait a minute, is this the same place that it was 3 hours ago?
Mm-hmm.
So that is really a revelation, if you will, especially I would imagine for volunteers who have never been plugged into or engaged in a service project before. And that is the impact that a community of people can have on a particular issue of need in a neighborhood, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And what you just described is exactly what we're going to be doing. Painting schools, cleaning up trash, just really trying to revitalize some of the places and communities where we're serving.
And part of the beauty of Serve-a-thon is that while most of our the volunteers we get on that day tend to be high school, we're also very welcome to corporate groups, parish groups, adult groups. Please come and help us serve.
Colette, you've got a tough job, as all development people do, in not only trying to raise the level of consciousness about Amade House, but also trying to tell the story of what sets it apart from different places. How has that changed, or has it so, in the increasingly competitive world of fundraising and getting money and people's attention for a program like this?
You're right. It is a bit tough, but one of the beautiful things that we've been able to do is, again, it's going back to the whole concept of community. We've really been reaching out to parishes and speaking with pastors and youth ministers and speaking with other parish groups and saying, how can Amade House work with you? How does this fit into what you're already doing? Because we recognize parishes are stretched very thin. We don't want to stress any parishes. We want to work with them, and most of all, we want people to be educated and learn about our program and what it is that we do. And there are many ways for people to get involved.
Now, Colette, does Amade House exist through the generosity of donors?
Amade House exists solely through the generosity of donors. We are completely privately funded, so we rely on parishioners throughout the archdiocese and on corporate parties who are support us through our annual gala and things like that.
So, Megan and Linda, do you, quote, get a salary? Do you get a stipend? Is it a complete year of volunteerism in terms of... go ahead,
well,
Linda.
We have a roof over our head and mm-hmm. food to eat, so that's always nice. But each month we get about $100, so you kind of have to see how far that can spend. So since we're just at the beginning of the year, we're trying to figure out how that works out and what we can splurge on and where that'll all end up.
Well, we need to bring today's program to a close and realize it's already 9:58 here in Chicago. I'm Father Greg Sackwitz, along with Wayne Madjars. We've been speaking with Annie Devine and Colette Healy, Linda Meyer, and Megan Krantz, all involved with Amade House and the great program and work that you do on your 26th year. And just talking to the four of you, the tremendous enthusiasm and joy and that sense of serving in the name of the Lord. It's not volunteerism. It's in the name of the Lord. I want to say thank you also to Wayne Madjars, and special thank you to the producer, Jim Dish, and our engineer, Brian Hockey Hitman Brock. To our listeners, have a great weekend. God bless all of you. Go Bears.
This is Cardinal Francis George. Thank you for being with us this past hour on Relevant Radio 950 AM. Join us every day, Monday through Friday, as the Archdiocese of Chicago presents the Catholic Community of Faith. Have a wonderful day, and God bless you.